done fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on the show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder mayhem tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Hall, and their dog Ninja.
Sometimes their cat, Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey guys, I'm Em.
And I'm Christine from And That's Why We Drink podcast. And from one spooky podcast to another, you guys are listening to Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 391 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, as usual, we want to start off thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks to you, men, women, and service animals, for everything that you do for us on a daily basis.
Yes, God bless you guys so much. I know we did recently have a plane that went down that had some Marines in it, which was very, very sad.
Yeah, out in California.
Yeah, so we pray for you guys still every night, and thank you for all that you do for us.
Tracy, we want to take the opportunity to let everyone know that if you're struggling with something, that there is no shame in letting people know that, you know, hey, maybe I need a break right now. Mentally, I'm maybe a little over the top right now as far as whatever's going on in life, and I need somebody to talk to. There's no shame whatsoever in having to talk to somebody. And I think that's the problem when it comes to the stigma of mental health is people look at it as a weakness, and it's not a weakness. It's just, you know, it's like I tell people all the time, if you had diabetes, you'd go see a doctor and get it taken care of. Or if you had a broken leg, you wouldn't say it's a weakness to tell somebody I got a broken leg. And you shouldn't look at mental stress the exact, you know, same way. It's a problem that most people have.
Nothing. Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, I mean, and that's unfortunate, but there is help out there for you guys for sure. You can, you know, join our group if it's for nothing else. Just if you feel like it's a safe place and want to talk to people, they're always there for you guys. And also, Jerry and I can give you our phone numbers. We'd be more than happy to help you and just listen. We're not, you know, by any means doctors or anything, but we still will love to take the time if you just need to talk to somebody. We're always going to be here for you. I've said it 1,000 times, the group is amazing. So God bless you guys for being there and doing what you guys do every day, all day. I mean, it's just amazing. And if you don't want to go that route, you can also call the crisis hotline at 988. You can also text them at 741-741. You're just an ear away. Just please, please reach out.
Absolutely. So let's do this. I want to get into the story. I've got a good one worked up for you. But we at least need to address last weekend. There was no episode on Sunday. The
very first time, well, I think it's ever happened.
I want to say the first time, but we had one that we recorded that I forgot to put up. Oh. Or I thought I put up right when we moved here. Oh. So it was it wasn't a best of, but it was one of the Patreon episodes, and I ended up putting it out the same day as the Allen House on the Clown Motel.
Oh, that's
right. But that was recorded, and I thought I had it set to run. It didn't.
It's been a little wacky around here for sure.
But last week, I flew back into Lexington to rent a U-Haul and get the rest of our stuff, and was planning on driving it back Saturday and had the episode ready to go. But other things popped up as I was in the storage unit getting ready to start loading with my son Alex. We hadn't even loaded anything on the U-Haul yet. We were just talking about our game plan. And we had walked a little bit. It's a long haul. It's one of the one of these inside storage units. So it was a long hallway that we walked down. And I felt a little bit out of breath and felt like back right after I first got out of the hospital last year, actually, like when I was really bad dehydrated. And I was standing there telling my son, I was like, let's stop for a second because I think I'm dehydrated and I'm just feeling lightheaded. And about that time, my defibrillator, which I had implanted in June, went off and shocked me. And for a second, I wasn't exactly sure what happened, but then it dawned on me, that's what that was. Mm. You know, that it's definitely an attention getter, to say the least. But they told me if that happened to go call 911. So we called 911. My son actually finished loading the U-Haul by himself and then took it and stored it for me. I was taken to the hospital because I had, I can't remember what it's called, myocardial something or other. It's basically your heart has three chambers. It's got a top, a middle, and a bottom. The top and the bottom do the exact same thing, and the top just quits working when the rhythm gets out of sync, and then the bottom starts trying to make up for it, so it starts pumping twice as fast. And my defibrillator is set up so if that happens, that's when the shock happens to try to get the heart back in a regular rhythm. Luckily, I had this thing put in June. Because if that would have happened and I didn't have it in, I probably wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
They said that it saved my life.
Yes.
Which Amen. Is what it's designed to do.
Yes. And I'm so glad that it did work. And, you know, of course, I'm all the way in Florida and can't be there with him. So I was freaking out a little bit. But the doctors took good care of him. And it just kind of got us off track. And I want to thank everybody that reached out and said prayers and all that great stuff for him, because it definitely did help. And I wasn't trying to start my new life in Florida without my hubby. I would have been coming right back home. So thank you guys again for reaching out. And we just love you all so much. You mean the world to us.
Yep. So I spent, that was Saturday morning. I spent all day Saturday, all night Saturday, and up to about noon on Sunday in the hospital for them to give you this special medicine. It's supposed to keep this from happening again, or at least lessen the chances. So I had to go through 18 hours of intravenous medicine, and now I'm on a daily dose of oral medication for this on the same pill. So we'll see what happens with that. But I feel like I'm a cat. I must have like 9 lives or something.
I feel like you are too.
But yeah, so it was a plus that thing went off, because originally I did not want to have it put in. I got it put in for Tracy, basically, so she would have peace of mind. And luckily I did. And now I go back and think, I had to wait like 4 months before they could put it in. And this could have happened during that 4 month period.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
But anyways, for people that are curious, this has nothing to do with me trying to load a truck. It has nothing to do with moving too fast. It was just one of those things. And they said it has nothing to do with, you know, just day-to-day life. Sometimes your heart just gets out of rhythm, and it could be stress-related. It could be just because I've got scar tissue on my heart. Could be several things, but it's not something where there's tons of people like, you need to slow down. It has nothing to do with that. This would have happened if I was sitting home watching TV, is what they told me. So there we go. But I do appreciate everybody's concern.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think the point he was trying to make was, we're sorry we didn't get the story out as well, because he had some of the pages written already, and he was supposed to, you know, fly up there and drive right back down the next day.
Yeah, I should have been home Saturday night. Yeah. Instead, I got out late on Sunday, and I spent the night in a hotel and watched the Super Bowl in a hotel room in Columbia, South Carolina, and then came back the next day. So it was Monday at around 3 o'clock before I got back into town. So,
but now we're all settled, and Jerry can quit doing that stupid stuff he's been doing, and get back to normal. And we're so excited, because I just told him I feel like we haven't done a Sunday show in like forever. So
it's literally been a week.
I know it, but it seems like forever. But we are so glad to get back, and we want to thank you guys for your patience and hanging in there with us.
Yeah. So Tracy, today we're going to talk about another haunted mental institution. This one is in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and it's the Old Bryce Hospital. Now, I'm going to tell you ahead of time, this story might be kind of confusing. And if people live in the area, you'll probably listen to some of what I'm saying and say, well, that's not right. Trust me, just keep listening to the end, and I I bet it gets fixed. As far as what I'm saying will make sense at the end. Okay. Let me read through that. All right, so sometimes when you hear the term old, it's because it's just old. But in this case, it's because there was actually a new Bryce Hospital built. And, of course, Tuscaloosa is where the University of Alabama is. And it will come to no surprise that there are all kinds of urban legends that are attached for these college students.
Oh.
Because, you know, there's always the daring each other to go do this.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So there, every college has, I would say, urban legends, whether it be a student somehow or another died on campus and they come back, or the or the music hall is haunted because of this or that. But you always have these stories when it comes to colleges. But it just so happens that University of Alabama's campus is right next to the old hospital.
Oh, well, that's good. They'll have a lot of different things they can enjoy, spooky-wise anyway.
Right. So let's learn a little bit about the old Bryce Hospital, formerly known as the Alabama Hospital for the Insane. Now, I want to first say, we're going to talk about a lot of history of this place. A lot of history, even more than normal. But I feel like it's important.
Okay.
So just giving you the heads up. It was in service from 1861 to 2014. The hospital came about because of Dorothea Dix. Now, she was this big, huge advocate. I don't know if she was national or more towards the state, but she was a huge advocate for the mentally ill. She was like their voice.
Good for her.
She toured Alabama in the 1840s, and due to her involvement, the Alabama Medical Society, the Alabama legislator, and Governor Henry Collier, they put together a plan and they enacted a law in 1852 to establish the hospital. Now, the hospital was built on 326 acres right next to the University of Alabama, as I said earlier. Now, the plan to pay for this, it's kind of a strange setup, first of all. You know, the state has taxes and everything, and they have a certain amount of income that comes in through taxes. The plan to pay for this was 5% of the state's annual revenue for the next 4 years.
Seems like a good plan.
It's just strange that they just said, well, we're going to just take 5% of all the revenue and put it toward. No, usually there's a dollar amount allocated.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it could have been more or less depending on the taxes done that year or whatever the deal. So anyway, that's what they did. But Tracy, what about the funding to run the hospital after it was built? Well, there was a fatal flaw there.
Uh-oh.
It wasn't even addressed.
Really?
Yep. So they knew how they were going to build it, but that was it. They didn't have any plan going forward on how they were going to pay for it.
No finish line, huh?
No finish line.
Dang.
Now, we've also talked about Thomas Kirkbride in the past when it comes to a lot of these mental facilities. His style of architecture was very popular back around this time, and it was considered to be, I guess they called it moral architecture. And it was that way because it was designed to be of a moral, more of a moral setting for these, and respectful setting for the patients.
Patients are good, the way it should be.
As we described it in the past, the Kirkbride plan used what they called a bat wing style floor plan.
What does that even mean?
Well, I'm getting ready to try to break it down for you. So let's think about this. You've got a main building. So picture in your head, you got a rectangle-shaped building in the middle. Picture that being the bat's body. Then you had halls and wings that went off each side, exactly the same on both sides, that went out and then diagonaled up.
Okay, I understand what you're
saying. So now it looks like if you made a bat out of Legos.
Well, yeah.
That's kind of what it looked like.
Huh. That's interesting.
The thought process from this whole Kirkbride plan was that if you staggered the wings, That allowed direct sunlight and fresh air into the patient's rooms and the common areas, and that actually would be highly beneficial to their treatment. And like I said earlier, this became the preferred method of building mental hospitals all across the country. Now, this hospital was constructed as a 3- and 4-story building with the basically the administration section and the wings on each side segregated the men from the women. Okay. So one wing had men, mm-hmm. one bat wing had women.
Okay. So did all the buildings that copied them, is that how they copied them as well?
I think so. I think there could have been a difference in levels as far as how high some of them were depending on what they needed. Now, in the middle section of the hospital, the bat's body, they had the staff facilities. They had the superintendent's living quarters. And they had recreational room and some storage and stuff like that. That building was 4 stories high. The two wings were 3 stories high and 3 segments long in each one.
Okay.
So basically probably 3 different buildings.
Okay, yeah.
And each one was 3 stories high. Construction began in 1853 and it was built by Samuel Sloan. It was very extravagant for a hospital. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a lot of like marble and stuff like that. You know,
well, that's awesome.
It was very nice. It was first known as the Alabama State Hospital for the Insane. But after seeing how hard that was to put on the team's basketball jerseys, they changed it to the Alabama Insane Hospital.
That don't sound much better.
I like how you just glossed right over top of that.
Yeah.
All right. So then the hospital actually opened in 1861 and was the first building to have gas lights and central heat in the city.
Moving on up.
But there was always a but. The gas lighting was only partially finished before the start of the Civil War. So that kind of put a hold on things. After the Civil War, the hospital was made a priority. Now, primarily as a source of employment on the Reconstruction era in Tuscaloosa. So Tuscaloosa was pretty much in shambles after the Civil War. So they not only needed the hospital, they needed it as a source of employment for the people who lived there. So the construction was a source of employment for most of those people. Dorothea Dix lobbied to get the state to elect Dr. Peter Bryce to be the first superintendent. I'm going to say something to you that you are going to not believe, and you're going to probably think that you heard it wrong, but make sure you listen to what I'm about to say. Bryce was an unusual choice for this position because few asylum superintendents in that era were actually physicians.
Well, how did they get that title then?
That's exactly the point. In that era, they were just hiring people. I mean, actually, they ran them. These hospitals for the mentally challenged were not ran by doctors because they ran them more like a business, more like a prison. So they didn't hire doctors in to do them. They hired people more like wardens.
Dang. Well, that was a dumb move.
But Bryce was actually a perfect choice to run this hospital. He had been in the medical business since he was 27 years old. He studied mental health care in Europe, and he worked at psychiatric hospitals in New Jersey and in his home state of South Carolina.
Hmm.
So, a lot of experience.
Yeah, definitely.
His tenure at the hospital actually helped build his reputation around the entire country. He demanded absolute discipline among his staff. Patients were to be treated with courtesy, kindness, and respect at all times.
Good.
He would settle for nothing less.
Good for him. I like him already.
Now, Bryce's management and commitment to the scientific treatment were recognized around the country as being in a class all of its own. Tracy, under his tutelage, the use of shackles, straitjackets, and other restraints were discouraged and finally abandoned altogether in 1882.
Oh, that's so amazing. That is so wonderful.
Bryce instituted a system known as the Moral Treatment Plan. Now, this is actually a new approach, obviously, to mental health services at the time. In his system, mental illness was viewed in terms of predisposing causes, which were considered to be psychological defects. He was also looking at precipitating causes, which resulted from environmental conditions in the home or society. Mm-hmm. The treatment generally meant they would be removing patients from likely precipitated causes, establishing a new normal, at least as normal as possible for them, while giving time for predisposing causes to heal. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
In other words, get them out of their bad situation, put them in a better situation, and eventually some of the issues would go away. That's the plan. Part of the plan was to put patients to work and, you know, well, at least patients that were physically able to work.
Yeah, and I think that's a great idea.
Do you?
I do.
Anyway, because this was part of the plan, the goal was, if you got the patients to working, this would divert their attention away from their mental condition.
Yes.
Patients were encouraged, not forced, to work in the hospital farm. They could sew, they could make crafts. There's good reason for this. This type of work would usually be assigned to resemble something close to what they did in the outside world before they got committed.
Okay.
So they would try to match them up with something similar to what they did in the outside world.
So they didn't force them, though, to do stuff. No. They just let them do it on their own. Good.
Not yet.
No, not
but
yet.
In the beginning, that's part of what we'll get into. But no, in the beginning, no, it was not like that. Now, this worked out for a few reasons. It was actually good for the patients, but it also helped the hospital to survive. Remember, we mentioned at the very beginning that there was nothing in place to help the hospital after it was built. So to make ends meet, the hospital had to produce many items on its own that they could sell to try to produce money. The state was at the point of giving them very little money already. So it was mostly put on them to grow their own food and produce revenue. But here comes the double-edged sword. And we know how government is, so this is not going to surprise anybody. The hospital's success in increasing revenues made the legislature decide to cut back funding even more.
Oh, come on.
So they were slashing an already insufficient budget. That's government for you. As you can imagine, things were really starting to go downhill after the budget cut. Bryce would eventually say that the hospital had transformed from one of the five best hospitals in the world to nothing more than a custodial warehouse for the mentally ill.
How sad.
It is sad. Tracy, Bryce's methods would be used all the way up to 1970.
No kidding.
So keep in mind, he took over in 1860s.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So he was able to put together a plan that over 110 years later, they were still using because they felt like it was working. The approach to treatment at the facility followed the concept that patients' work was an important component for mental health care. But the hospital continued to suffer a chronic lack of funding and budget cuts. This made the hospital rely more and more on free patient labor and the sale of their goods. This factors into what you asked a little bit ago. By the 1970s, the concept of patients remaining in the hospital for long periods of time began to take place because at the same time, they were working, producing revenue, and this became a subject of public concern. They started noticing, hey, something that was innocent in the past now has become, hey, we're going to keep you in here because you're producing free labor for us. So they weren't letting people out like they probably should have been. A growing number of people were starting to feel like patients were being routinely and unnecessarily restrained by the hospital as a source of free labor.
Well, good. I was wondering if, like, the people actually noticed from the outside what was going on and could do something to stop it.
They did. And a national law was passed so this could no longer happen. This national law would obviously keep that from happening in any state.
Good.
Now, originally, this building was designed to hold 250 patients. In 1875, the hospital was increased to hold 350 more patients, so it more than doubled. Between 1872 and the 1880s, some of the patients wrote and edited their own newspapers. These writings today can kind of give you a rare look into the life of a mental institution in that area and what the patients felt and did.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
I'm glad they got to voice their opinions and stuff. I mean,
oh yeah. I want to touch on a few things about the building itself before we move on. In 1870, the facility gas system was overhauled. Remember we told them it was one of the first to have gas?
Yes.
Well, they started to utilize a coal mine that was actually right underneath the hospital to fuel its light and heat. And this move, it lasted for a while, but the coal mine permanently closed due to an accident in 1902.
Oh, really?
So I don't know what they did after that, if they went back to gas mm-hmm. or if they found another coal distributor, what the deal was. Dr. Bryce died in 1892. And 8 years later, in 1900, the facility was named the Bryce Hospital in his honor.
Good. It should be.
All right. Well, let's get to the...
Did he not have any family?
I don't know. I didn't see anything about his family.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get to the ugly side.
I wonder why he died from...
Well, I mean, I think he was old.
Just old? Oldness?
Because that was 1892. He had taken over the hospital in the 60s. That was over 30 years.
Yeah, well, I guess that's right.
And he was 27 when he started and had been everywhere else. I mean, he would have been in his, I don't know, he was old.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't look it up, but can I continue?
Sure.
Okay. All right, let's get to the ugly side. And you knew that was coming. We haven't hit the ugly side yet. In the early 1900s, the hospital began to sterilize patients in order to reduce the number of mentally ill, unstable people in society. This was basically known as the eugenic movement, where people realized that certain practices were okay to improve genetic qualities of the human public. So if they felt like, hey, there'll be less mentally ill people out there, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
This would eventually stop and be seen as a very bad thing as far as its ideology once it was taken overboard by the Nazis.
Oh, my goodness.
In reality, that was the whole thing that started the Holocaust mm-hmm. is, you know, Hitler deciding that, hey, we're getting rid of this type of people and we're getting rid of that type of people. And if you weren't what he deemed to be the perfect race, you were just on the list to, you know, be exterminated, unfortunately.
Him and his stupid little mustache.
He did have a stupid little mustache. Him and Charlie Chaplin were the only ones I can think of that had a mustache.
Yeah.
Well, overcrowdedness plagued the hospital.
Oh, I can imagine.
Throughout the 1910s and every decade thereafter. In 1949, a report found that the daily population of Bryce Hospital was 5,732, giving it the largest patient load of any state.
Wonder where they put everybody.
I mean, they probably crammed them all in the rooms with just cots. Oh. That's what they did into all the other ones. But out of those 5,700 people, there was only 10 full-time physicians on staff.
Whoa.
So that's what, one for every 57?
Oh my gosh.
Conditions went from bad to abysmal in the 1960s. Patients were basically given no treatment, and they were just overcrowded and understaffed living conditions.
That's so sad. Everything was going so pretty good for them. And
it had been years since it had been going pretty good.
Yeah.
It was going good in the early 1900s, and that was kind of where it stopped.
Right.
After he died, things started going downhill. The daily food allowance went down to 50 cents per patient for the entire day.
Oh.
And this was in the 60s. So.
I mean, well, I wonder what you could get for 50 cents.
Not much. In 1967, Governor Lurline Wallace, she came and she viewed the facility, and she was actually moved to tears after, I don't know why it said this, I didn't say this, this was what it said in the story, after an overweight, mentally challenged 9-year-old attempted to hug her, crying, "Mama, Mama."
Aww, bless her heart.
She then lobbied for more funds for the institution. Now, a report for the Montgomery Advisor likened the living conditions to a concentration camp. To add to this problem, a cigarette tax that had been instituted for mental health care actually was cut, and they had to lay off 100 Bryce employees because they couldn't afford to pay them. Now, Tracy, this is where things were going to take a turn for the better.
Well, I was going to say, it can't get much worse.
In 1970, 15-year-old Ricky Wyatt became the named plaintiff in a class action lawsuit famously known as Wyatt versus Stickney. Now, Wyatt had been labeled a juvenile delinquent, and he was housed in that hospital in intolerable conditions without being diagnosed with a mental illness.
Oh.
He was, according to them, just a problem child.
Oh, so and just,
this is where they were going to stick him.
Yep, stick him in there. Nobody will ever know any different.
I don't know why he didn't, why they didn't put him in a juvenile delinquent home or whatever the case is. But now his aunt had been one of the workers that got laid off from the hospital. They both testified about the horrible living conditions, and they disclosed that there was improper treatment to the patients, that only the only reason they were doing these treatments were to make the patients more manageable. So I'd imagine they're probably talking about lobotomies and shock treatment and stuff like that.
Mm-mm-mm.
Well, in 1971, two other facilities were added to the lawsuit. This was Camp Partland and Searcy Hospital. The results were a court-ordered basic minimum standard of care for people with mental illness and intellectual disabilities. So, if they were residing in an institution, they had a set level of care that had to be done by every hospital. This was the nationwide model known as the Wyatt Standard. So, this went all around the country. It wasn't just there.
Mm-hmm.
It was all around the country. Because Bryce couldn't provide the standards listed for the new law, because of a lack of funds, the state had to release almost half of the patients being treated there. The case of Wyatt versus Stickney came to a conclusion after 33 years.
What?
It took 33 years to come to a conclusion. They went through 9 Alabama governors, 14 state mental health coordinators. It was the longest mental health case in U.S. history.
That that is really something. Was he still alive after all that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
He died in, I'm going off memory here because I didn't write it. He died in like 2016 or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Throughout the years, Bryce also became the center of the civil rights movement for people. Remember when I told you that people listening might say, hey, that doesn't sound right or what have you? We're getting ready to get into that part.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember what I just said. Throughout the years, Bryce also became the center of the civil rights movement for people. We'll get more into that in a little bit. But one last thing before we get into the paranormal. In all, Bryce Hospital utilized 4 different cemeteries for the interment of almost 5,000 unclaimed patients that died in their care throughout the years of operation.
Oh my goodness, that is so sad.
Now, we've discussed this before, but as was practiced back then with most institutions, Patients' graves were generally marked by either a small metal or concrete marker bearing only the patient's number, not their name.
That's just so disrespectful.
The Department of Mental Health still holds all the logs that provide a record of who was actually buried out there.
Yes, yeah, so I was going to say they still have all the names.
But due to vandalism, theft, and relocation for highways, about 60% of the graves are no longer marked at all.
Mm.
In 2010, the state of Alabama placed historical markers at all three burial sites, though. And after 139 years of continuous operation, only the original building and one wing are still standing.
Yeah, they all got knocked down, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. All this is going to go, the part I'm going to tell you is going to go into the confusion part of the story. So, in December of 2009, it was announced that the Bryce Hospital would move into a new facility and that the University of Alabama would take over the old facility. The university decided to utilize the remaining buildings, and they made them into a welcome center, an event space, classrooms for the performing arts, a couple of museums that actually focus on mental health, and like a students area and stuff. So that's what they used it for.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's jump on to the paranormal side. But first, we're going to take a quick sponsor break. All right, Tracy, even with what we just said, there are some buildings that have been completely abandoned, and it's in extremely rough shape. And when it comes to haunting of the old Bryce Hospital, odd writings on the wall, strange noises, code spots, they all seem to occur. Now, there's also a feeling of being watched in several parts of the hospital. There have been a few reports of telephones ringing, even though there is no active phone number there. There's been furniture moving, footsteps in the empty hallways, and strange hot and cold temperature swings in different spots. Here's where the confusion comes in. Remember I told you the University of Alabama took those buildings and did them.
Right.
And you're probably thinking, well, how is there an abandoned grown-up building on the campus if they've turned all this stuff into wings?
Yes.
Or into new things. Remember when I said that the hospital would become the focal point of the segregation movement?
Yes.
Or at least not the. In the 1930s, I think 1939, but we'll get more into that, they built a new part of the hospital. It was a single building away from the rest that were designed to hold African-American patients.
Mm-hmm.
That is the part of Bryce Hospital that I don't think the University of Alabama owns this part. And it's not on their campus because it's away from the rest of it.
No way.
So you will hear people respond to that building as Old Bryce Hospital.
Uh-huh.
But when I say Old Bryce Hospital is haunted, we're talking about that particular building, not the part that the University of Alabama is using for all their other stuff today. You can see where the confusion comes in.
Definitely, yeah.
All right. April Moody says that by far the creepiest place that she's ever been has been Old Bryce Hospital. And she's been to several creepy places. She said the setting there really just kind of plays with your mind. It's so run down and so old. Just the fact that it was a mental institution by itself really brings in a darkness and a sadness to the place.
Well, I'm sure.
So why does April think the place is haunted? Well, she actually made a trip there with three other people. And they admitted that they weren't supposed to be there, but they thought, you know what? Everybody at school's talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
We want to go check it out.
Yeah, definitely.
And they would all have to sneak on because there's police that do patrol it.
Mm.
And It is against the law to be on there, and you can get arrested or get tickets or fined or whatever the case is. So they would always go at nighttime, for there's less likely to be seen.
Right.
So people weren't sneaking there in the daytime. So they had their flashlights, and they would turn them off every once in a while to see if anything would happen. Well, one time when they did this, they heard a noise. Now, at the same time, April saw some type of movement in the lighting. So they walked toward where they saw the movement, and they heard another sound. And for some reason, this floor that's completely filthy with debris and broken glass and everything, this floor was nice and cleaned off in this one section, right in that area where they heard the noise. They noticed a fresh footprint on the floor where it was cleaned. They turned off the lights again. They weren't exactly sure what they saw. They didn't know if it was paranormal. They didn't know if it was just somebody had walked on that area. They didn't know why it was clean, but it freaked them out. So that's why she thinks the place is haunted.
Oh, now, so Justin, it's a clean ghost.
It's a clean ghost. Justin Price said the place is creepy, not just because it's abandoned, but because it has bats.
Oh.
That would be fun. Zach Ganford said, the building itself is very ominous and cold. He said, you're definitely taking a step back in history when you walk in. He's also said he's heard a lot of strange noises, and it really depended on the sort of frame of mind when you were in there, but it always sounded like something to him was moving on the floor, something being scooted. And that's why some people say like the sound of furniture in there. I don't think there's a lot of furniture stuff in there. I think there's some stuff, but over the years, the Bryce Hospital has known to be the Jemison Center. So that's what you'll hear people call it, Old Bryce Hospital, but the technical name is the Jemison Center. So it was owned by the Bryce Hospital, and it was used by the Bryce Hospital, but it's away from the rest of the campus, like we said earlier. It's got quite the reputation for being haunted. Many have explored the hospital and report lots of paranormal activity. This building was actually built in 1939, so I was right about that. We mentioned earlier that the hospital was a focal point for the civil rights movement, and that was, I know I'm repeating myself, but I got ahead of myself earlier. Is that okay?
No doubt.
But this was the hospital for the African-American patients. As many as 131 patients were housed in this building and forced to share one bathtub.
Oh, come on.
I don't think they had to use it at the same time.
Well, duh.
Rub-a-dub-dub, 151 men in a tub.
Yeah, I think I would. Well, I don't know if they could go outside in the rain and wash yourself.
Well, it doesn't rain all the time.
Yeah, that's very true.
Many were forced to work for free in surrounding locations. Some of these places were plantations, so it really brought things back to the slavery years.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Here we are in 1939, 1940, 41, and they're working for free on plantations.
Oh, yeah, and that's such hard work.
So it was not a good situation. So I'm sure this figures strongly in the paranormal activities there. I know the Ghost Brothers have went there.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I knew they had went there.
Oh, cool.
So some visitors have reported finding scratches on themselves after leaving. And I will say this, the place is, like I said, is heavily patrolled, so don't go get yourself in trouble if you're in the area. I am interested, though, if somebody, we got way more, but if you are in the Tuscaloosa area and you're familiar, we would like to hear about it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So with that being said, here are some reports from people who have ventured into the building. All of these were posted anonymously on a website that's dedicated strictly to Old Bryce Hospital. This one was posted just last week.
Oh. As
a matter of fact.
Cool.
Tracy, they were only there for 2 hours, but they had so many events happen while they were on the property.
Well, good for them. It's like
a trip to the Whispers.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, that's exciting, though.
So they started at the Jemison Center. And they heard footsteps. And at one point, they heard what sounded like a man clearing his throat on the east side of the second floor. They said the west side had the ceiling had completely collapsed from the third floor all the way to the first floor. So this is a dangerous place to be, as you can imagine. They also went, oh, I didn't tell you about this part. There was a nursing home attached to this place at one point.
Oh, man.
So they also went to the nursing home side. And, of course, that's abandoned, too.
Yeah.
Because this place is all grown up with weeds and stuff.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Wonder how come they've never, like, just torn it down.
I don't know. I don't know why these places don't get torn down like that. So they went to the nursing home side, and they said that's where it got rough. They were looking through the rooms, and they were trying to get EVPs. They heard noises out of four of the six rooms that they went to. And what would happen is they would hear noise in one room, and they would run over to that room. And then they would hear noises coming from a different room, either beside them or behind them.
So it's sort of like the Scooby-Doo thing when you run in and out the door. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What? So they felt like they were going crazy at one point. In one room, there appeared to be, or what appeared to be what they assumed to be an exam room. They got overwhelmed with emotion. They actually sat down on the dirty floor. They felt so sad and angry. That's when they noticed that their back and their neck was burning. After, that's the one person, not all of them, the one person who wrote this. A friend checked it out and they noticed several scratches down the base of their neck to their, all the way going down to their shoulder blades. They said it was burning and red and you could see obvious scratch marks. So they decided, it's time to leave. Let's get the hell out of here. As they were walking out, they could hear someone running up behind them, and then they were pushed in the back. They said they could feel the coldness on their back of when they got touched.
Oh, yeah. That would have been enough for me.
So how about that for an experience?
Man, I mean, you know, when you go to these places, you hope you experience something like that. So
I don't. I don't hope to get pushed and scratched.
You don't want to?
No.
Why? Then what's the point?
I mean, they can talk to me and I can get a couple of EVPs and if they want to touch me or something or tug on my earlobe, the Carol Burnett effect, I'm good with that. But another person says that the first time that they went there, they went with some friends. They were in a room where one of the friend's chest started like really to have, it hurt. They had chest pains. They had never had chest pains before. This was a younger person. So that was weird all on its own self. So they start to run because, you know, that's what you do when you've got chest pains, experience chest pains, take off running. So while they were running, they turn around and they saw a human-sized shadow figure with eyes reflecting from their flashlights. They were almost to the car. And the friend that had the chest pains started to experience the chest pains again. So I guess somehow it stopped when he started running. But then when they got almost to the car, it was back again. Then they heard a little girl saying, "Hey, come back." She sounded like she was in distress. They went back a second time, not that same night. And they said it wasn't as scary, but the same friend had chest pains again.
Wow.
Now, theoretically, that could be almost like a panic attack.
Yeah, for real. Yeah.
And maybe they're just...
I'm really surprised he wanted to go back after that.
Yeah, you would think. But anyway. So, the second time they went back, they said they heard something being thrown, but there was nothing around. They could just hear things being thrown.
So, it wasn't actually thrown at them.
Right. But, I don't know. Strange. One young lady was actually taken to Old Bryce by her boyfriend. She said that she had lived there her whole life and she'd heard all the stories, but she had never been there. So it's on her bucket list. You need to have maybe a stronger bucket list than something that's for free in your city.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. She finally felt safe enough with this guy to go ahead and go. So they get there. It's around 9 p.m. They explored the Jemison Center. They said quite a few stairwells were actually blocked off by debris, but they could still make their way around the building. They felt watched the entire time that they were in the hospital. They didn't hear anything strange in the main building, but the creepiest part was the old nursing home, again. It's a huge building with several rooms. The doors are made of heavy steel, and in this building, they heard footsteps close to them. They even heard one of those heavy doors slam all on its own, which they said there's no possible way that the door could have slammed. There was no wind or anything in there. And even if there was, these doors were too heavy to slam, much like we had happened at Waverly.
Yeah, it did happen.
On their way out, when they were between the nursing home and the Jemison building, they heard a woman scream. They said it was loud. They walked the entire property but didn't see anything else. They wanted to make sure there wasn't somebody in need. All right, last one. This person and their friends have been to Old Bryce several times, and almost every time they've had an experience. The last time they went, it was Halloween 2021.
Ooh.
That would be fun. They heard a single dog bark. Then they heard a very loud bang that was unexplainable. There was nobody in the building besides them.
Well, I mean, did it sound like a door slammed again or not necessarily that?
I don't know. They continued on the journey, and they were then sitting in a room with their flashlights on, right? So what happens next? It either confirms that somebody is actually in the hospital, even though they said it wouldn't, or there was some paranormal stuff going on. Something made them jump up. Now, this is what they think the problem was. They realized how dark it was, and they heard footsteps. But it didn't sound like footsteps on broken concrete, which was all around, and that's how it sounded when they were walking down the hallway. But they could hear footsteps that sounded like it was on a clean floor. And like before, they said that the place was completely abandoned, so there was nobody there. They began to run out. And they said they were now walking down that first path after they walked out that goes from behind the building that leads you out the back way. Then they heard a baby screaming from the woods. They said it sounds so fake that they weren't sure if it was real or not. It's like a fake baby cry. They said it was so dark you couldn't see your hand in front of your face.
So they didn't kind of go toward that sound, I guess?
No, they did. And they were actually recording all this. So this guy that did the recording, he said when he got home and he played the videos back, he heard someone screaming in agony, though they didn't hear it at all when they were there in person.
Ah, oh, wow, that is really scary.
Tracy, that is the story of the Old Bryce Hospital.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there. It turned out to be a sad place, then a kind of a happy place, and then kind of a crappy place. So it's been through all kinds of stuff.
It has. Mostly crappy. So it was good for a small stretch of time while Bryce ran the hospital.
Right. So. Oh, that's really, I hated that it ended that way.
Yeah, but they all ended that way.
Well, that's very true. That's true.
You know, we wouldn't be doing stories on mental institutions back in the 1800s if they all ended with everybody lived happily ever after.
Wouldn't that be a nice change?
You always
change?
End up with Cropsey or something like this.
Right.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and then we'll be back with some Patreon and new stuff. All right, Tracy, so I am working on two live shows. It'll be the only two we do this year, and then we'll have the cruise in September.
Yay.
So first of all, if you hadn't signed up for the cruise, go sign up.
Come on, y'all.
Right. But we are going to do a show in St. Augustine. Not sure where yet. Working on it. And we're going to do a show in Casadega at the Casadega Hotel.
Oh, cool.
That show is going to be a small show. We can only get 30 people in there. Both of these shows we're going to do with History Goes Bump.
Oh, fun.
So...
Well, good.
There we go. And I'll have, hopefully you have more on that this coming week.
Okay, great.
So I just got to set the dates and all that stuff, locations. The Casadega one will probably be the first one.
Yeah, that was cool out that way.
Yeah, it was cool. So anyways, that's that. Tracy, what do you got?
Well, we had a lot of reviews, and we want to thank everybody for taking the time out to do that.
And please, let me say this. I know we say this a lot. If you guys can go leave a review, even if you've left one in the past, it helps us a lot. And especially now that we've cut back on episodes, I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. We cut our revenue in half by cutting half the shows. How can that be made up? New listeners, one. And we can do that if you guys will leave more reviews, more people find us, we'll get more listeners. So if we can double our listeners, we can make the same revenue we were making with twice the episodes. Does that make sense? So this is going to give you guys way better episodes, and it's going to give you the length. This episode was 55 minutes already, and that's what we were doing in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And we're excited to do that, but we did, you know, there's a sacrifice that had to be on our end too, financially. Like I said, so we've cut our revenue literally in half. I start a new job Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
and to make up the difference in revenue. So not something I wanted to do, but it is what it is. And that's where we're at this point. So if you guys could go leave a review, that is absolutely free. You could post about us on social media, or you can tell friends, whatever you can do. That's free, of course, to help get us new listeners. We would greatly appreciate it.
Amen, brother.
But reviews are the biggest thing.
Yes. All right. We had Rose, Am I Nice? Nanya Biz, 70. Jason B, 007. Mojo Lobster. Chef Jeunesse. Rooney, 711. SK Morse, 007. Susan Bowman. And Cat Girl in Vermont. Thank you guys so, so much for your reviews. They were really nice, and we appreciate that. And our Patreons this week is Shelley, Brenda Berard Inelli, and Mallory Bradley. Thank you guys for your support. It means the world to us. And, you know, we just want to keep growing our family bigger. And just thank you guys for your support all these years, and we love you so much.
Absolutely. All right, guys, that's it for us. And always remember, we do Patreon bonus episodes at the first of every month. So if you have a paranormal story that you would like to share with us, send us a message, and I'll get you on.
Yeah, be great. And I hope you guys have a blessed week.